Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to another Bike James podcast. In this podcast, I am going to talk about the science of coaching and learning mountain bike skills. So this is an important subject for a couple reasons. One, your technical skills is one of the most important things you can invest in as a rider. Okay, the better your skills are, the safer you're going to be, the faster you're going to be able to ride, and the less energy you're going to use. And it's really, when you understand the science of performance and you see that what really separates top performers from everyone else is their efficiency, right? It's just, yeah, they've got big engines and stuff like that, but their efficiency, their movement efficiency, particularly with the specific movements of their sport, are usually much higher than the average person. And so really, it doesn't matter what, you know, kind of cycling sport you're looking at, the winners are usually the ones who pedaled the least. And so being able to pedal like mad is great, but that's not actually the key to long-term sustained performance. It is improving your movement skills, especially on the bike, your technical skills on the bike. And so improving that is super important. Okay, so, and also again, just the safety factor. Like one of the things that I mentioned in my Becoming the MTB Warrior podcast is that, like, you don't want to be the person in the group that is voted most likely to end up needing help, right? Like you're riding at the ragged edge of your skills all the time, and you're just rolling the dice, and eventually you're going to crap out, you're going to end up hurt, you're going to end up being the one that needs help instead of being the person that could provide help if needed. So if you're going to be the MTB warrior, you got to make sure that your skills are to the point where you can ride safely. And again, you know, you're going to crash, things are going to happen. And again, that's why you also take care of knowing some of the medical side and things like that. But at the end of the day, knowing, having good technical skills is super important if you consider yourself a mountain biker and want to take this seriously. And so, but one of the problems is that there's a lot of different ways to coach and learn movement skills, and not all of them are created equal. In fact, some methods are demonstrably better than others. So there is science behind coaching movement, and particularly as it applies to coaching movement skills in the gym and sports skills. And this is one of the things a lot of people who are in the coaching field, especially the mountain bike skills coaching field, don't even realize exists. And so it's hard to tap into something that as a group, most people don't even know is out there. And so again, just opening people's eyes to the fact that there is science behind this stuff. It's not all just opinion and conjecture and I feel this or whatever. Like there is science that we can look to that can help us make better training decisions for ourselves. And if we happen to be in a position where we're coaching someone, whether it be a professional capacity or just in you trying to pass on some skills to a new rider, then knowing how to properly do that so that you're going to give them the best experience and help them learn the quickest is going to be best. And it's also really important for you because, again, like your learning experience is important. So you knowing that, you know, as I talk about this, like how we learn the best. And so let's say you get into a situation where you're at, you know, someone is coaching you and they're not using the science behind coaching and they're using cues that are not as effective. And so knowing like, okay, can I take these cues? And, you know, again, you don't got to argue with people. It's something you just do in your head, but knowing how you can take those cues and reshape them in a more effective way for yourself is going to help your learning process. So just relying on someone else to, you know, expecting them to have the best coaching cues to help you accomplish what you're trying to accomplish. You know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, but being your own best learning advocate, so that you know what, you know, works best for you so that you can help interpret these things sometimes can make a big difference in your learning and how quickly you can pick some of these things up. So again, like I was saying, there is some very fascinating science around the subject of cueing and teaching movement. And again, movement cues are the things that you tell someone to help them move the way that you want them to move. And so the words that you use to help teach somebody how to move is what we're talking about here. And I've definitely changed my own cueing habits over the years, both just from experience and seeing what worked and what didn't work. And then also, as I was digging into the science and learning more about it, I started to consciously move away from certain types of cues and towards other types of cues, and have found that for the most part, the science has held up. Like this is a more effective way to help someone learn movement skills. So I was first exposed to this concept several years ago. I forget how long ago it was, but it was at a presentation that I heard from a coach named Nick Winkelman. It was at a Perform Better Summit in Long Beach. And Nick used to work for, it was Athletes Performance way back in the day, like Mark Verstegen and Core Performance. And then it went on to become Exos. And Nick Winkelman was worked for that company for some period of time. And now he works, how does he do it? It's something over in Europe. I forget what, like soccer or rugby or one of those sports over there. So, but he's now over there coaching. But he was in his presentation, it was called The Language of Coaching. And he talked about how he was taking a deep dive into the science behind language and the language we use when cueing movement. And that he was finding that there was some very interesting things as to how certain types of language and certain types of cues were much more effective than others. And so again, like I'd never really thought about it before. You know, instinctively, you know, if you've ever, you know, tried to learn something yourself or had somebody try to teach you something, like sometimes somebody tells you something and it just clicks and you're like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, you know, those moments are what you're looking for, both as a learner and as a coach. And so I hadn't really thought about the fact like, oh, there may be science about this. Like we can actually look at what is more effective and start to use that to hone our own cues to be a more effective coach. And so I started to apply some of the things that he talked about, and I found them to be helpful and more effective. And then last year, I came across the book that he wrote. It came out last year. It's called The Language of Coaching. And in it, he spells out everything he's found in the last few years of researching and applying the science behind the research into coaching movement skills. And super fascinating book, especially if you are a coach or really kind of a nerd about learning, then it's a must read as far as that goes, because there's really nothing else like it. And the things that he's talking about, again, like in 5-10 years, will be more common knowledge. But if you want to stay on the forefront of what's going on with learning and coaching, then this book is one of those, super important books that are going to, you know, I think it's going to mark a change. Like more people are going to become aware of this concept because of this book, and that's going to create more interest, which is going to make it better known. So anyways, you can wait until everyone else catches up, or you can stay ahead of the curve and read that book and start applying the stuff. So remember, at the end of the day, learning and coaching mountain bike skills is no different than learning how to, you know, lift weights properly, how to throw a fastball in baseball, how to swing a bat or a golf club, you know, kick a soccer ball. Really, any movement skill or sports skill that you can think of, the principles behind, you know, coaching it and learning it are going to be the same. And so these findings are going to be as applicable to our sport as any other. And I just say that because sometimes, man, the cycling and mountain bike industry have done a really good job of creating this impression that mountain biking and cycling is different, right? It's different than other sports. So, you know, maybe those things work over there, but our sport is different. And it's not different, right? Like, we're really just applying movement principles to a movement problem. And in our case, it happens to be riding a bicycle down a hill or up a hill, right? But, you know, riding a mountain bike. Like that is the movement problem that we are trying to solve. And the principles behind solving those problems are going to be the same, no matter what you're talking about, no matter what movement problem you're talking about. And so the better that you can understand movement principles and then how to apply and teach those movement principles, the better you're going to be able to understand how to learn and coach people when it comes to mountain bike skills as well. So, and again, like I said, it's important for you to know this, even if you're not a coach, because again, you may find yourself in the position of, mentoring a new rider, which is something, you know, really one of the greatest privileges all of us could have, is to be doing this long enough and learn enough to have a new rider come up and we can share some of our knowledge with them and you know, just perpetuate and keep this thing going. And so, again, you may find yourself in the position of mentoring a new rider and trying to help explain some, you know, basic skills to them. And so knowing this will help you with that, but it will also help your own learning journey, like I mentioned. So just keep that in mind. So, all right, so digging into learning, right? So getting started with that. So when it comes to learning, there's a couple basic things that you need to know before I, you know, get into the details of the book. And the idea behind coaching any movement skill is to give your brain the input it needs to figure out how that skill should feel. So this is another really important concept that I forget how long ago it was, but again, it really changed drastically how I coached people. Because I started to realize that, you know, you don't execute a movement based on step one, step two, step three. Like a good movement is going to feel a certain way. And the body can process feeling and make adjustments so much faster than it can try to run through step one, step two, step three. And so coaching people based on how something feels and how it should feel and getting them to engage with what good movement feels like. And then don't worry so much about step one, step two, step three. Just make the movement feel that way, right? Like if the movement feels right, it is pretty much going to look right. But you can try to do step one, step two, step three and make it look right. And it may look like pretty good, but you can be completely missing the feel of how the movement should feel when it's being stabilized in the right areas and the movement's driven from other areas. So like this is really what you're after, is it's the process of creating the movement, and that process is going to have a distinctive feeling, and that's what you want to be trying to learn, right? So skills aren't step one, step two, step three, but like I tell people when I train, teach them jiu-jitsu, right? So if I'm teaching someone an armbar, you know, step one, we've got to isolate the arm. Step two, you've got to do this. Step three, you've got to do this, right? So everything is step one, step two, step three. But when you're rolling and you're doing jiu-jitsu in the moment, you can't think step one, step two, step three. Because by the time you think step one, step two, it's too late. They're out of there. Like same thing with riding. If you're trying to think of the, you know, step one, step two, step three, or however many steps of cornering, for example, that you may have learned, man, by the time you get to step two or three, like you're blowing through the corner. You can't process that fast enough to really apply it in real life. And so what I tell people in jiu-jitsu is like, look, these moves, you know, like step one, step two, step three, this is not jiu-jitsu. Okay. This is the window into the principles that are jiu-jitsu. And it's your job to use these steps to look through that window and figure out what are these principles that I'm applying. Because again, there'll be a certain feel to proper application of these principles. And then when you're rolling, you're not thinking about the steps. You can feel, oh, okay, I'm feeling what I need to feel. That's where I need it. I'm feeling the pressure in the right place. I'm moving the right way because I can feel it. Like that's what allows you to move effectively on the mats. And that's also what allows you to effectively move on your bike. Okay. Same thing. Like, yes, when I coach people, you know, technique, again, going back to cornering, like there are some steps to cornering, but understanding, like you're not going to be able to think about these things on the trail. Your job is to move past thinking about these things and to really focus on how they feel and then, you know, replicating that feel. Okay, so again, the best in the world, they're not thinking through the steps. When you're watching, you know, World Cup riders, they're not thinking step one, step two, step three as they're doing anything. Okay, like at that point, they are thinking less than the average rider. Like, you know, the pros think less than we do. Okay, they just know what the important things are to focus on, and they focus on those things. And, you know, we're like focusing on all these other crazy things that don't matter as much. And once you're able to drill it down and really boil it down to what the most important things are, then it makes it easier. Okay, and so, you know, just another thing to keep in mind, and this is kind of getting into the findings in the book, right, is that even when we are talking about step one, step two, step three, most people tend to overcoach, right? One of the first things that he found was that less is more, and that most coaches tend to overcue a movement skill and give people way too much to think about. Okay, and while there is some science behind this observation, like this is mainly my observation, my experience backs that up 100%. I mean, 3 to 5 cues per movement is the most that someone can remember. Like, if you can't boil something down to 5 steps or less, you need to go back to the drawing board and figure out how to do that. And again, there's some things here that I'll get into that can help you do that. Some other findings from the science. But if you're trying to learn things in this very detailed, technical way, then, you know, like step one of cornering is to, you know, drop your outside foot and then straighten your inside elbow and then shift your hips to the outside. And you know what I mean? If it's like if that's how you're thinking about cornering, then that's not going to work on the trail. Okay. And you've probably experienced that already to some degree. Like, it doesn't work on the trail. So you're trying to boil this down to like 5 steps or less. And then even within that, you're trying to boil it down to like, what is the one or maybe 2 things that I really need to be focused on and how that should feel. So again, man, when you're cornering properly, like there is a very specific feel to doing that. And focusing on that is what's going to get you through the corner, not trying to think through the actual steps themselves. And so, but again, like you need to condense down to like 3 to 5 cues per movement. All right. So less is more. Say less. And this is something that I used to be really bad about. I mean, in fact, some people could probably still accuse me of it. That's why I like the podcast, because I like to talk a lot. And, you know, I would just go into super detail on how to coach a movement. Somebody would come into the gym. Oh man, let me show you how to do a deadlift. You know, this here and this here, and you want to make sure the angle of your shin doesn't exceed this here, and all this stuff. Okay, now we're going to do it, and I need you to, you know, focus on this and this and this and this. And you know, I'm thinking that I'm impressing people with how much I know, and all I'm doing is confusing the poor crap out of these poor people. All right. And so like, as I started to realize that, and I started to try to say less, I mean, again, you can go back and watch some of my early videos on YouTube where I was, you know, giving exercise demonstrations, and they're like 20 minutes long because I just won't shut the fuck up and get to the exercise because I'm explaining all these little fine details and points, which, you know, is great. Some people are into that. Some people like to nerd out on that stuff, but most people don't, right? Most people, they just kind of want to know, what do I need to know so that I can learn this and apply this like now? And so saying less and figuring out like, how can I boil what I'm trying to say down into like 3 to 5 points goes a long way towards learning. And again, with you, if you get someone who is, you know, giving you the 10 steps of whatever, like, can you boil those things down into fewer steps that's going to make it easier for you to remember? And, you know, is a way that you can apply this as well. So moving on, like kind of the next thing is that the body learns best through analogies. All right. So comparing something to something. So like saying like, you know, you can't fire a cannon from a canoe. You got to have a strong core, right? Like that's an analogy. People can, they can think about, oh yeah, I know, you know, I can see a cannon in a canoe trying to shoot and it sinks. Like you need a strong, you know, battleship to shoot a cannon from. So you need a strong core, right? Like that analogy makes sense to a lot of people as far as like, well, why do I need a strong core? Oh, you can't fire a cannon from a canoe, right? Like that's an analogy. Like I could come back with the scientific. well, you know, the, you know, just the rectus abdominis and the obliques and the, you know, go into all the anatomy and explaining, you know, all that stuff and why it's important that you have this structural integrity. And like, you can go into like the super detailed thing that most people are going to check out and fall asleep on, or you can tell them you can't fire a cannon from a canoe. Right. So it, like, most people are going to respond much better to the analogy because they come alive in people's minds, where like technical, you know, more technical stuff for most people are just dead. Okay. Like it doesn't mean anything. And so the using the analogies, and the thing also is that the analogies need to stick in that person's head. And so that means that the analogies can be different for different people. Like, you may come up with a good coaching cue, a good analogy that really works well for most people. And you're going to come across some people that are just struggling with it. For whatever reason, the analogy doesn't come alive and stick in their head the way that it does for most people. Whether it's just, you know, their life experience is different. I mean, you know, people's life experience who, you know, live in the, you know, in New York is going to be different than someone who lives in Texas. And so I'm sure there's probably an analogy that you could throw out there that a Texan would, you know, understand immediately. And you try and use that on some, you know, city slicker from New York, and they're going to look at you like, what the hell are you talking about? And vice versa, right? Some analogies from New York are going to work well with them. So, you know, understanding your audience helps with this. And also just knowing that you're going to have to play around with different cues. There's no one cue to rule them all. Like, to, if you think that you've got it figured out and this is how it is, and this is the way that everyone learns best, like, you're fooling yourself. And so, like, some people will not respond to the best coaching cue that you've ever come up with. And also for you, like, you may not respond, excuse me, to a coaching cue for whatever reason. And you may need to try to think like, okay, I kind of understand what they're talking about, but is there another analogy? Is there another way for me to look at this that will work better for me and my situation and, you know, the analogies that stick in my head? So, you know, just remember, people don't think in exacting detail, and analogies help you pack a lot of cues into one. So that's one way that you can reduce the number of cues maybe that you're either using yourself or you know, you learned or whatever, is that instead of, you know, they're probably like very technical in nature. And so if you can find an analogy that's able to package, you know, two, three or more of those technical details into a colorful picture, then that's going to be more effective, and it helps you pack more information into fewer cues. And so that's really one of the powers of analogies, is that you're able to pack more information into less cues. So we need to talk less, right? Less is more. Fewer cues are going to be more effective, but we need to make sure the cues that we have are dense with information. And the best way to do that is through analogies. So moving on to the next thing that the science tells us, and I learned in the book, and this has to do with external versus internal cueing. And this is one of the areas, this is going to be one of the most sensitive areas for a lot of people that do coaching or have been to, you know, coaching clinics and stuff, and have really bought into a certain way of looking at how to execute a skill. But there is a difference between internal and external cues, and the science clearly shows that external cues that focus on something outside of the body are going to be much more effective than internal cues that focus on a body part or muscles. All right. So, for example, if you're trying to coach someone on a deadlift or even like body position on the bike, right? Because that's, you know, one of the things with the deadlift is it helps simulate how we want to move on the bike, going from a tall position to like a low attack position. And so if you are, you know, telling someone to push their butt back, okay, pushing your butt back is an internal cue. Your butt is part of your body. That is, you know, giving them to just, you know, that is an internal cue, okay? So, well, how could you turn that into an external cue? Well, again, this is something I used to do, right? Like, I used to tell people, push your butt back. You know, then I started telling people, well, push your butt back behind your heels. So that kind of gave them a little bit of an external cue. I'm still giving them an internal cue, but I'm giving them an external focus for it. So I'm not just telling them to, you know, push your butt back with no direction, I'm now giving them some sort of direction, right? They're thinking about their heels and they're moving their butt back behind their heels. So it worked a little bit better. But what I found to work even better is to tell someone to push their back pockets to the wall behind them. Like there is a button on the wall behind them and they've got to push that button with their back pockets. Okay. And so again, it sounds trivial, right? Like, well, what's the difference between butt and back pockets? Well, your back pockets are external. Okay. They are outside of you. And again, the science shows this, that little change between telling someone back pockets and butt makes a marked impact on how well they're able to execute and learn the movement skill that you're trying to teach them. Okay, so again, it doesn't matter. This is why science is great. It doesn't matter about your feelings. It doesn't care about your feelings. Okay, science is science. And it's like, this is what the data shows. And you may feel that you've got the best coaching cue in the world and it's awesome. But man, if it's an internal cue, if you're talking about, push your butt back, or you're talking about push your elbows out, or you're talking about drop your heels, or, you're talking about body parts, then you are using internal cues. And these are less effective cues. It's not that they can't be effective, right? That's not what the science shows, is that they're not effective at all. It's just they're not as effective. And so if the idea is to try to provide someone with a cue that is going to provide them with the easiest journey between with where they're at and the movement skill that they're trying to learn, whether it's yourself or someone that you're working with, then this is very, very important to understand and apply. And again, I had to get rid of a bunch of coaching cues that I used to use because they were very internal focused, right? Squeeze your glutes. How many times have I told someone to squeeze your glutes? Okay, that doesn't mean anything to most people. I hate to tell you guys this, but it doesn't. You may love to tell people to squeeze their glutes, but it is a nonsense cue for the vast majority of people. Okay, telling someone to get as tall as they can, right? Like they're trying to touch the top of their head to the ceiling. Like that is going to cue someone to stand up straight and tall, as opposed to trying to tell them, squeeze your glutes at the top, lock your knees out. Okay. Like, tighten your core. Like these cues are not as effective as external ones. But again, it's easy to come up with them, right? The internal cues tend to be easier to think of, which is one of the reasons that they're more common. And the problem is that we like using internal and external language. That's really what it boils down to. Like, what is the language we're using and what's the context we're using it in? So when I am explaining a movement, and then I will use internal and external language to explain the movement that I am showing someone or what I want them to do. But when it comes time for them to do it, and I give them the cues, like, okay, now with all that said, here's what I need you to think about. You think about blah, 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 right? Like step one, step two, step three, and they're going to be analogies and external cue focused. And so that's when I'm at that portion, I minimize the internal language. And if I use it, I make sure that I'm using it in the context of also using it within, the external, context as well. Cause sometimes I will tell people, man, just push your butt back towards the wall. Like there's a button behind you, right? For a lot of people, that'll actually work just fine. And if I find anybody doesn't, you're not, okay, how about your back pockets? Push your back pockets. Okay. So there is a combination sometimes of the internal and the external, and there is a way, which I'll explain here in a second, that he found to help turn internal cues into external cues. Because sometimes you are stuck with body parts, right? But again, if you're telling people elbows out, like that's an internal cue. Like that is not, you need to find some sort of external cue to get people to focus on that will help them get their elbows where you want them, as opposed to trying to tell them, place your elbows here in space. And so like, again, it's just the external cueing is more effective. And so let's see here on my notes here. So the next thing is thinking about the direction of the cue. So are you moving away from something or towards something? So for example, You know, I could tell someone, you know, push your back pockets behind your seat, slide your back, you know, think about your back pockets, and you know, you got a, your wallet's in there, and you're trying to push your back pocket as far back behind your seat as you can, right? So now what I'm doing is I'm having someone move away from something, or I can tell them to slide their back pockets, push their back pockets, their wallet, you know, whatever, you know, cue is working for them, whatever analogy is coming to life for them. I want them to push it towards the wall behind them. You know, like there's a button on the wall they're trying to push. So now I'm having them move towards something. So it's the same basic movement, but the cue that I'm using is different. Okay. Am I coaching them to move away from a point in space, or am I teaching them, or am I having them move towards it? And again, it's like the science isn't, you know, as definitive that like, you know, moving away from is better than moving towards. There was a slight preference towards, you know, cues that had people moving towards something as opposed to away from something, but it was slight. And really what this is more about is that this is another tool in your toolbox to think about, okay, if a certain cue isn't working for myself or someone I'm working with, how can I change it? So one thing you can change is the analogy. What analogy are you using? The other thing you can change is, you know, one, making sure that it's external instead of internal. And the other thing is the direction that you are having them move. And so are they moving away from something? Or are they moving towards something? And so that is, you know, another way to think about your cues and your movement on the bike. And so finally, one of the tricks that he came up with was to use tape to help turn an internal cue into an external cue. Because sometimes you have two internal things. Like I want my shoulders to move towards my hands, right? So like when I'm coaching someone on body position on the bike and I want them to move in a balanced way, one of the big problems that people have is when they, you know, they push their butt back, they shift their weight back as well. They don't know how to move their weight in a balanced way. This is why like dropping your heels is not really what you want to do, because it unbalances you. It pushes your weight backwards, which is not balanced. Sometimes you want your weight backwards, sometimes you don't. Right? You don't always want it backwards. And so you want to start from a neutral balanced position and then be able to shift your weight forward or backward or stay neutral as needed. And so your ability to move from that tall position to the low attack position while staying balanced on your feet and your bike is a super important skill. And one of the ways that you can check that is to focus on your shoulders and the back of your hands, right? So if you're doing this properly, then your shoulders are going to stay over your hands. They're not going to move behind your hands. They're not going to move in front of your hands. Well, that's an internal cue, right? My shoulders and hands, those are two internal things. So what can I think about? Well, I could tell them, cue them for the handlebars, right? My hands are on the handlebars, so I could tell them to, you know, think about their shoulders in relation to the handlebars, right? But I still have an internal thing that I'm talking about with the shoulders there. So what Nick Winkelman found is that by putting a piece of tape on the body part that you are wanting them to move, it gives them an external thing to focus on. So if you put a piece of tape like on the front of your shoulder, and so now I tell you to, and I can put a piece of tape on the back of your hand, or like I said, I can have you just focus on the handlebar, right? But if I put a piece of tape on the back of your hand, now that's an external thing too. The piece of tape on the front of your shoulder is an external thing. So now as I tell you, I want you to close the space as your butt pushes back, right? You're sliding your back pockets, you're sliding your butt back towards that button on the wall behind you or back behind your seat, whichever cue is working for you. As you're doing that, you should feel that space. You should notice the space between that tape on your shoulders and the tape on your hands decreasing. They should get closer together. Because again, a common thing that people will do is they'll slide their hips back, but they'll keep their chest upright. And so one, it compromises their core position, and two, it throws you off balance. So like as your butt slides back, you need your chest to come down. Okay, so like that's technically what you want to have happen, but as a cue, that's not a great cue. A good cue would be to, you know, slide your back pockets to the wall behind you while bringing the tape on your shoulders and hands close together, right? Like that based on the science is a better way to explain to someone how to move on their bike than, you know, push your butt back or, you know, bend at the hips or whatever that is, right? So there's a lot of different things there. So the tape is a super effective way to help bridge that gap. Okay, so remember, man, cueing is super important because that is the bridge between knowing something and feeling it. Yeah, remember, you knowing how to execute a movement and being able to actually do it are two different things. And that gap is that, you know, that between knowing and feeling, right? If you know how to do it, then you then if you're able to do it properly, then there's a feeling to it, and that's what you're looking for. So good cues are going to make that journey easier. But man, bad ones can make it impossible for you ever make it there in the first place. I mean, if someone's giving you a bad coaching cue, it can really make it hard for you to learn how to move properly. If you're focusing on the wrong things, if you're focused too much internally, if you're thinking about too many things and not really understanding the goal is not to memorize these steps and try and think about them quicker, it's to discard these steps and move beyond them to how something feels, right? Then it can really mess you up. So that's why cueing is so important for you to understand, both for your own journey and also if you're helping people. And so the best cues, right, it's kind of summarizing what he found. The best cues are going to find analogies that connect with the learner to describe the movement in a way that allows quality movement with minimal thought. That is always the goal, right? Quality movement with minimal thought. So, but you remember before I want to look at, I've kind of touched on a little bit, but just, you know, how we can apply this to like body position on the bike, just to give you an example. But just backing up to the beginning, you know, you need to have position before the movement pattern. Okay. The best coaching cue in the world will not work if you can't get into the positions that you need to execute it. So again, if you can't touch your toes, you don't need to go to a skills class. You don't need to worry about that because you will physically be unable to get into the positions that you need to execute the skills properly. And so then you're just going to learn bad habits and you're going to learn compensations. And so this is why the stuff that we do off the bike is so important. If your mobility is poor, your movement quality is poor, then your skills are going to suffer and it's going to make it harder for you to learn and you're probably not going to learn them properly. You're probably learning some dysfunctions and compensations to work around your movement and mobility issues. So make sure that you can get into the position needed before you start worrying a lot about the pattern. And if you're a coach, you need to be honest with the people that you're working with, that you're not doing anyone any favors by leading someone to believe who can't move well that they're going to be able to execute what you want them to execute, right? Like telling them up front, like, look, and this is what, if you've ever been to any of my clinics, like I have this talk right up front, like you're going to run into the limits of your movement skills at some point, right? At some point during what we're going over here, it's not going to be a matter of, you know, me trying to find a better coaching cue or you trying harder or anything like that. You're just going to be up against your physical limits of being able to apply what we're trying to teach you. And you just need to know that and be comfortable with it and understand that this is part of the journey. Like you were only able to get this far into it this time, but as you improve and as you're able to move better and as you're able to, you know, apply these things to the bike better, then that barrier is going to move. And so you're going to be able to apply these skills better, right? But it's, you're not helping people, yourself included, if you're not being honest about the impact that your movement quality has on your skills on the bike. So I know in this day and age of telling people that they could improve, that is not the popular opinion, that everyone is just fine the way that they are now, and that self-improvement is a tool for making people feel bad. But for those of us that have not bought into that bull crap, then you know that you can get better every day, a little bit better. And that's one of the things that you need to be focused on. If it's a weakness of yours, you need to be honest about that and focus on that rather than worrying about the on-bike stuff. Again, I'm not saying don't ride your bike. I'm just saying you're wasting your money if you can't touch your toes and you're going to a skills clinic. It's a waste of your money, all right? Spend that time, energy, and effort on getting yourself in a better shape, getting yourself better movement quality, and you're going to get so much more. One, you're going to find that your skills are going to improve naturally. Like, I believe that most people's skills suck. It's not a lack of, just skill. It's a lack of movement skill, right? Like, there's a lack of athleticism on the bike, just general athleticism. And then, you know, if you have some base athleticism, then your body will figure out how to ride a bike. Like, you can always refine things. Like, I'm not saying you don't need skills coaching or skills classes or whatever. I'm just saying that you would be shocked at just how much your skills would improve by the simple act of improving your strength and mobility. And so, but anyway, I'll get off that soapbox for a minute, but we do need to, again, remember, if you can't get into the position in the first place, the best coaching cue is not going to help you. So with that said, though, let's take a look at some coaching cues for body position. Let's assume that you can touch your toes, or you are well on your way to that, and you're going to need to know, okay, well, now how do I start to apply my quality movement that I have to this movement problem of moving on my bike effectively? So when you look at how people coach body position on the bike, there's a lot of internal cues that get used. You know, I've talked about this a little bit, so I won't spend a whole lot of time on it. But, you know, things like bend at the hips, tuck your shoulder blades back and down, elbows out, push your butt back. All of these things are internal cues, okay? Ones that I used to use, all right? So I'm not saying anyone's a bad person if you use them. We can learn and we can grow and we can become better. All right, so alternative cues, though, could be things like, you know, like I talked about, like push your butt back, or since that's an internal one, some people may respond better to push your back pockets to the wall behind you. Like, there's a button back there and you need to push that button, you know, and you may even get silly, like, you know, pretend that the world's going to blow up if you don't. Like, it's surprising how analogies and just being silly with things sometimes can get spark people's brains to understand what we're talking about. And so that's one that I found to be effective. You know, you can say tuck your shoulder blades, but instead of saying, you know, tuck your shoulder blades back and down, you know, tuck the tips of your shoulder blades into your back pockets. Okay, so again, now we're giving them an external cue, and I'm giving them a very specific thing. And for a lot of people that have trouble with that, what I'll do, and again, with permission and all that stuff, is use a little touch training. So if you come up and they don't really know where, the problem is most people don't know where their body parts are. So you tell them shoulder blades back and down, and they're like, theoretically, I know where those bad boys are, but I don't know where they're at. I can't feel them. I can't make them move. And so that's where the external things come in, right? Like, they understand and can feel these external things better, and it helps jumpstart the internal movement. And so by coming up and just, like, you know, putting a couple fingers on the bottom of the shoulder blades and just kind of gently, like, you know, moving the fingers down towards the back pockets and saying, I just need you to move, so feel where I'm touching here. Now, and you feel kind of how I'm pulling them down. I need you to just, you know, move where I'm touching down towards your back pockets. And again, that touch gives someone an external focus, right? So now they have an external focus to help them understand better where that internal body part is. And so next time you come back and you say, look, I need you to tuck your shoulder blades into your back pockets, but do you remember how it felt when I was touching them? All right, so I need you to remember that. I need you to tuck that area that you were feeling, that needs to get tucked into your back pocket. So again, using external things to get them thinking about their movement is going to be better for them and help them more, right? And so another one that has been effective for me, especially for the elbows thing, is to get even pressure across your palms into the bar. Like, press your palms into the bar so that you feel even pressure from, you know, from one side to the next. And what you'll find is that, you know, there's a little kind of like a slight diagonal line that your bar rests on in your palms. Okay, and you go all the way to the far edge under the pinky, and then over there to the webbing between the thumb and the pointer finger. And you want to have even pressure across the palm with that diagonal. And what you'll find is that elbow problems and shoulder problems and things like that will manifest themselves at the hands. Okay, so like, if my elbows are too far in, if they're collapsed in, then I won't have good pressure at the web between my thumb and my pointer finger. like that pressure, they'll peel up and I'll lose that pressure. And if I have my elbows too far out, which is it is a very common problem. This is the problem with elbows out, is that people tend to take it too far and they push their elbows to the point that they start to lose the pressure on the outside of their palm on that, you know, under the pinky there. And so you don't want that either. You want that even pressure. So if you have, if you or someone you're working with is thinking about driving their palms into the bar so that there's even pressure into their, across their hands, what you're going to find is that their shoulders and their elbows are going to be in a good position because they have to be in a certain position for them to be able to apply pressure evenly into the bar. And that's the position that we want our body in. So by giving them that external cue, like that's how I check my body position. When I'm riding, I am paying attention to my palm pressure. There is so much that you can tell about how you're holding yourself, where your weight is, so much information simply from the pressure and feel of your palms on the handlebars. Now, of course, this is where you got to get past the ridiculous, light hands, heavy feet. Like that's another, you know, two internal cues, terrible internal cues if I ever heard them, right? Like, you know, got you focused on hands and feet, which are internal cues, and, you know, heavy and light, which what does that mean, right? Like, so the science shows that that's a terrible cue to use. So what do you actually want? Well, I want good pressure through my feet into my pedals. Well, there's a feel to that, right? Like telling someone to press their feet into their pedals, like they're standing on a bathroom scale and they're trying to, you know, add some pressure and make the scale move just a little bit. Okay, like that's an external cue and an analogy that gets people to understand how to apply pressure through their feet. That's what we want. It's not heavy feet. I want good pressure through my feet. And then what I want is proper pressure. I want purposeful pressure through my hands into the handlebars. And again, this is a term that I coined and has been picked up and used in different areas of the mountain bike skills world. But you can go back and check the article on Pink Bike where I talked about, are we misapplying light hands, heavy feet, where I coined the term purposeful pressure. Because by telling someone light hands, heavy feet, you give them the idea that they don't want any weight at all on their hands and they want all their weight possible on their feet. Well, this is terrible advice to give someone because you have to have weight on your hands in order to apply pressure. Pressure is weight used actively. Okay, so do I want just a bunch of dead weight on my hands? No. But telling someone to not put any weight on their hands is not the answer either. What we want to do is teach them, this is pressure. And now this is how you want to use this pressure. Sometimes you want more of it. Sometimes you want less of it, right? Like there's a proper use of pressure through your hands at the handlebars. And so it's that pressure that you want to be focusing on, not, you know, your elbow position or some, you know, crazy thing like that, right? That's one of the things, like, man, with this elbows out thing or your handlebars get too wide, right? If your handlebars are too wide, it's going to flare your elbows too far out. And you're going to find that it's really tough for you to keep proper pressure across your palms the way that you need to. And so again, like that is, this is just basic body mechanics, right? Like basic, movement principles 101, like to be able to apply pressure through your palms evenly is the strongest way to do it. And it means that your body's in a strong, stable position to do it. So this whole thing about like wide handlebars creating more stability, it's freaking hilarious because it messes with your palm pressure, which is the number one indicator of how strong and stable your upper body is, right? So what you're looking for is a handlebar width that's going to allow good handlebar pressure, good hand pressure for you to be able to use effectively on your bike. So anyways, I know that's kind of like a total like side tangent thing, man. But man, the pressure across your palms is such a valuable tool. You can go to bikejames.com. I've done a few posts on palm pressure and even one where I talked about, you know, like, hey, look, this is all the things that you can learn from the pressure at your palms. Like, you know, so many things that you're sitting there thinking about can be summed up quickly through just assessing what's happening with the pressure at your palms. Right. So anyway, so, you know, just kind of wrapping things up, I already talked about using tape on the shoulders and or the back of the hands to help people understand, you know, as their hips slide back, they need their shoulders to drop down as well. They need the chest to come down, chest and shoulders to come down. And so how do we turn that into an external cue? By using some tape on the front of the shoulders and the back of the hands, or even having them focus on the handlebars. But that will help turn that into an external cue. So those are some ways that, you know, I have changed my own. Remember, I used to tell people, bend at the hips, tuck your shoulder blades back and down, elbows out, drop your heels. All these things are things that, you know, you can even go back and find videos, I'm sure, that I say these things, because this used to be how I coached these skills. This is how I was taught to coach these skills. And so, you know, and they worked, right? People got benefit from them. But we can do better, right? The science has shown that we can do better than an internal focused cue that doesn't use analogies to help people learn stuff. And so you can, you know, look at what we're doing and say, is there a better way to do this? And you can do that with everything, right? And coaching is one of those things that we can certainly do. And again, it's not just the mountain bike skills coaching world, right? Like fitness. I mean, you find this in pretty much every profession where, unfortunately, most of the people doing it are relying way too much on the talking heads and the perceived experts in their field and not doing enough research on their own in order to really either justify what they've learned from these experts and stuff, or to see if maybe there's more to it and a better way to do it. And so, but again, this is one of those areas that really every coach in every area can improve. I mean, like I said, myself included, when I read this stuff, I had to go back to the drawing board on a lot of coaching cues. I'm still working on this stuff. I still find myself falling back into internal based cues because they're easy and they were a habit for so long. But catching myself and switching to analogies, switching to internal or external based cues has proven to be way more effective in helping people learn. And that's really my ultimate goal. Okay, it's not to stroke my ego and be like, hey, I'm the best coach and here's the coaching cues that I've come up with after all these years and thought, and then this is the best and I've taught, you know, hundreds and thousands of students with these coaching cues and that's it. Like, no. My job as a coach is to help you learn, period. Okay, and if I find a better way to do that, then I'm going to do it. And that really should be the goal of every coach out there. And I know there's a lot of coaches that is their goal. But I also know, just through experience both in the mountain biking world and fitness world and other areas, that there's a lot of coaches that's not necessarily their goal. And they don't want to hear about how they could improve. And they don't want to know how they could do better because they take that as you telling them that they suck now. And again, I don't want to get into that discussion. So that's fine. But you know yourself, right? Like, this is where you being your own best learning advocate comes in. Because if you get into a situation or you're looking at a coach who's, you know, hey man, this is one of the best coaches out there and blah, blah. Okay, well, do your research and find out. Look at some of their videos. Look at some of their writing. Find out, how do they cue? How do they teach? Okay, like, and if you find that it doesn't fit in with the science, then you may be able to find someone who's able to do it better, right? Or you may just need to know that going into that situation that you may need to be prepared to process the way that they teach through what the science says is a better way to learn, so that you're actively creating your own better cues and better ways of learning this stuff yourself. But it's definitely something that we can all benefit from knowing more about. So like I said, it's easy to get caught up in internal cues. I mean, to be honest with you, external analogy-based cues, they are tough, man. They can take some thought and they don't work the same. So you got to be able to adjust based on your students. And so it does take a little bit more work as a coach to go down this route, but it is worth it. Again, if your goal is to help people learn, then it is by far the best way to help people learn. So again, like, take a look at how you've learned and applied your MTB skills. You know, see how much internal and technical based cues you use yourself or have been taught, and see if you can find some external and analogy based cues to replace them and see how they work. I mean, man, one of the biggest breakthroughs I ever had with cornering was when my father-in-law, who is in the surf industry and, you know, lives in Hawaii, and we were talking one day, and he's telling me about how cornering. It's like, oh, you know, people think cornering on a surfboard, it's all in the hips, you know, and it's not, it's in the shoulders. You know, the shoulders turn the hips and then the hips turn the feet. And I was like, huh, that's interesting, because, you know, I've always thought that turning the hips was the key to cornering on a mountain bike. I wonder if there's a difference there. And so I went out and I started cornering, and I was thinking about, like, you know, you watch, you know, I haven't been surfing myself, but, you know, you watch videos and you can see the surfers like whipping their shoulders. And so I'm thinking about like whipping my shoulders into a corner like a surfer. And man, my bike was just woo, whipping underneath me like that. And so, you know, just even myself like that, it pulled so many things, you know, drop the inside shoulder, straighten it, you know, all these, you know, step, like being a surfer and carving a wave and just thinking about carving a corner on the trail, like I'm carving a wave, got me all those things falling in place. Right. So just even myself, my own journey, I found some of my biggest breakthroughs with my own technical skills when I was able to replace this either internal or really technical based understanding of something with an analogy that just clicked. Right. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, that gets it. And all of a sudden everything's moving the way I want to without having to think about it as much. Remember, that's the goal. Maximum movement quality with minimal thought. That's what we're always looking for. Right. So I'll be posting some videos in the coming months, sharing some of the new ways of learning mountain bike skills based on the science of cueing that I've talked about. I've already got a couple shot going over body position, you know, manualing, your front wheel lift, and then your and cornering as well. And so I'll be sharing those over the next few months, just give you guys something to think about, maybe a new way to look at some of these skills, a new way to think about learning them. If you're, you know, we can always get better, right? But I know a lot of people out there struggle, and, you know, they struggle with being able to apply skills consistently. And I know I was one of them, you know, I was one of them. And a lot of these things that I'm going to be sharing with you guys are really the culmination of my own journey with trying to become competent myself, right? Like, I was no great talent on a bike. Like, I haven't told this story in a while, but I remember wrecking trying to jump off a curb when I first started riding my bike. Like, literally, freaking, you know, 8-inch curb in Santa Barbara. And I got no clue what happened. I was like, oh, watch me, man, for, you know, do a little freaking front wheel lift, jump off of it, and just wadded into the street. And I had no clue what happened, right? So, but that was typical. I mean, if I didn't crash 5 times a ride, like, that was a good ride. So I was no natural talent, man. I had to work my ass off to get decent at riding. And one of those things that I had to work hard at was technical skills, and then trying to figure out, like, how do I improve my own skills? Like, there's a lot of selfish drive behind MTB strength training systems. I just like to share my lessons that I've learned on this journey with you guys. So anyways, all right, let's wrap this up. Remember to check out bikejames.com. Get the Atomic Strength Training Program. That is my isometric training program. That is the cornerstone of my own workout. I'm getting to the point where when people ask me advice on strength training, I'm like, are you doing isometrics? No, start there. If you're not doing isometrics, I don't want to talk to you about anything else, because until you're doing isometrics, you're not really doing strength training. Okay, so once you understand isometrics and their role in creating true tension skills that you can then apply to different movements, including what you do on the bike, until you understand that and are applying isometrics in your own training program, you've got a big gap in your own training program and your strength goals. And so the nice thing about isometrics, though, very quick, right? 20-minute workouts. They don't leave you sore and beat up and tired. I do isometric workouts before I go for rides. Okay, so it's not like a typical workout where once you're done, you feel like, oh man, I'm all beat up and sore and tired. Isometrics are easy on the joints. They're awesome. Okay, it's totally changed my own training and really given me a new lease on my training life, so to speak, because god dang, I'm beat up from just crashing on my bike. And, you know, I've sacrificed many body parts to the mountain biking gods, and some of them more than once. And man, heavy weights and heavy weightlifting, I love that stuff, man. Loading up a bar and cranking out some heavy deadlifts and just rah, like, dude, I love that stuff. But man, it can't be a lifestyle. It cannot be your training program, especially as you get older. It just leaves you too beat up, and you end up with a choice of, like, either quit working out or, you know, just keep beating the crap out of yourself and dealing with surgeries and pain stuff. And so isometrics will change that. So check out the Atomic Strength Training Program at bikejames.com. sign up for the newsletter there. And also remember to check out pedalinginnovations.com. Check out the Catalyst pedals, the best pedals out there. And you can learn more about the science. Remember, there's science about the pedal stroke too, guys. It's shocking how many coaches out there have never heard of the Morneau and Korf studies, right? Not that they've seen them and they have some sort of answer for them. They've never even heard of them, right? Like, how on earth do you not know that there's studies out there that have looked at the performance difference between pulling up on the backstroke and just pushing down, right? Like, looking at different pedal stroke types and showing definitively that pulling up on the backstroke is nonsense, that you produce less power and you do it less and you use more energy to do it than just pushing down hard on the front stroke. Okay, so that's just one of the pieces of science out there. Science that shows that the midfoot position is as effective as the ball of the foot, right? So this idea that you need to be on the ball of your foot for anything is a myth as well. So there is science out there. And remember, science doesn't care about your feelings. You may feel that something is the way to do it, but science is the way that we move past that stuff. And the Catalyst pedal is the pedal that you would design if you looked at the science of the pedal stroke and how the human body moves and applied those two things together. You get the Catalyst pedal, which is why it has the cult following that it does. You know, we don't have to do any crazy promotions. We don't got to hire professional riders and do all this, hey, look at me, we're cool too, crap too. Because our riders, the people that ride the pedals, tell everyone else about how great they are because how great they are. And we also offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. So we put our money where our mouth is. If you don't think that they're as great as I say, I'll give you your money back. No questions asked. You can beat the crap out of them for 30 days. No questions asked, okay? No one else in the cycling industry does that. And that's because no one else like is as confident in their product as I am, period. Okay, they can talk all the blah, blah, blah they want. Let's see, put your money where your mouth is. If you really believe your pedals are the best, you really believe your, you know, whatever's the best, put your money where your mouth is. And nobody else does. So, you know, that says something right there. But anyways, so check out pedalinginnovations.com, get some Catalyst pedals, get the Atomic Strength Training Program, and work on your skills, using external cues and analogies, and get out on the trail, have fun, and I will talk to everybody next time.